This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to the Monday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
Can I say, rain, go away, come again another day? Man, it is dreary. I get to use my favorite word, lugubrious.
You could,
jeepers.
You can say it, you can plead for it, but I don't think that's happening in the next few days. So
it's not going to do any good. It's that time of year. It's like, you know, it's not winter yet. It's still kind of fall, and it's really warm, which is weird. Mm-hmm. And then just this onslaught of rain. It's driving me crazy.
Well, you know, I guess there's probably no better place to be than, you know, at your local Bi-Mart right now. We just heard that, you know, Lucky Number Tuesday, promoting it for tomorrow. It's Lucky Number Tuesday tomorrow. But I would say, you know, get indoors, do a little early Christmas shopping at a place like Bi-Mart.
Yeah. Ammo.
That's the great stocking stuffer.
wouldn't you love like a little box of 9mm? Oh, Santa, thanks. Well, today is the 8th of December. It is one of my sister's birthdays. Happy birthday, Malouche. That's not her name. That's her nickname. But it's also love and respect a soap opera writer. I think I admitted this last week. I did watch Luke and Laura's Wedding. I was kind of a General Hospital fan back in the day. I did like Days of Our Lives when I was a young mother. I was stay-at-home mom with my son, and I did kind of get into Days of Our Lives there for a little while. But the writers, I mean, I don't know if you've ever watched, it's like the long pauses, rehashing the same dialogue sort of day after day. So I don't know what kind of writing chops that takes, but okay.
Well, and you know, that's the thing, is these things have been playing like new episodes for how many decades, and I'm kind of going, you know, it's one of those little jokes of, you know, oh, my mother and her stories, or my grandmother and her stories. Yes. And you know, so when my wife's not working during the day, I'm like, are you gonna stay at home and watch your stories?
I know, don't bother mommy, she's watching her stories and eating, what was it, always sort of eating bonbons, whatever the hell a bonbon is. I guess it's ice cream, but anyway, so there's that. It's also National Brownie Day. Totally behind that. Yeah. Love a good brownie. I mean, you know, marijuana is legal in Oregon, so you can have an enhanced brownie if you want.
Well, I have too many kids to make enhanced brownies, but gosh darn it, that sounds like something worth really investing in this evening. So that might be what I end up doing later tonight.
Very, very cool. Well, it's also National Blue Collar Day, and I'm totally down for that. I mean, we talk about that, you know, where, you know, the new billionaires are going to be the plumbers and the electricians and the welders and the HVAC techs. So definitely celebrating National Blue Collar Day, because most of these guys and gals, especially if you do an apprenticeship or something like that, you're debt free and you're looking at probably six figures within 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
Good on ya.
I am just sitting here going, and if you ever talk to someone in that's doing a house project that needs electricity or plumbing or anything like that. You know, my brother had a basketball court built on his property a few years ago, and they put lights out so they could play at night. And he's over in Central Oregon, and he actually was getting letters from the county because they could not get an electrician out. Just no one had time to come and sign off on the final product. So it took like 6-8 months for him to finally get someone out there. So yeah, if you want a luxurious career, you know, working with your hands but making plenty of money, I'm sitting there going, I'm going to tell my son, get in there, come on, do that stuff.
Yeah. And again, with apprenticeships, there are local companies. There's lots of contractors around. I mean, that, you know, there's apprenticeship programs, and even if you have to pay, I mean, you're not looking at, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a semester for some useless degree. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's also cool. And then finally, it's also, and this one's weird, who makes these days up?
Someone from the future probably did.
I know. Good job. National Pretend to Be a Time Traveler Day. One of my favorite books, The Time Machine. That's great. Great story. Mm-hmm. Great story. But National Pretend to Be a Time Traveler. How do you?
Well,
I guess you have to pretend because you really can't be a time traveler.
Well, if you went out and bought yourself a DeLorean, you know, you might be able to, you know, get up to 88 miles per hour and see what happens. I don't know if I'd recommend it in a DeLorean in this weather, but hey.
So yeah, so that's weird. So National Pretend to Be a Time Traveler. Okay, I love that when you really start trying to wrap your brain around that with all the remember the butterfly effect. It's like, don't get off the little path if you step on that butterfly and you come back. So there's all kinds of great sci-fi and great stories out of that premise. But
well, and all the different styles of time travel, and what does it do? Is, you know, is it the quantum leap, or is it the Back to the Future, or is it
the hot tub?
Yeah, or is it the time heist in Endgame? Is it what, you know? What is it? What are the ways that you can, you know, time travel? The great debate.
Yeah, the great debate. Well, it'll continue. It'll continue. So happy that day to all who celebrate. I think I'm kind of my favorite one on this one's going to be National Blue Collar Day, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Good job, Blue
Collar. That's a good one. We need it. More of
well,
it.
Well, a lot of stuff happened on this day in history, too. I didn't know this. Well, I guess I did. I just didn't know the date. And this day in 1794, a fire destroyed much of the New Orleans French Quarter. Huh.
So many things.
They go better. They're better.
That's right. Of course, in 1863, Lincoln issues the Proclamation of Amnesty and Reconstruction.
Excellent. Excellent. In 1940, the Bears beat the Red. I was going to say the Rednecks.
You can't say
the
that.
Redskins. Wait,
beep,
yes, I
beep,
can. I'm
beep.
Saying they beat the Redskins. It was the Redskins. In fact, I think they want to change it back. What is it? The Commanders or something now?
Yeah, it's the Commanders now after a couple of years of being the Washington football team. And now, you know, actual Native American groups are saying we prefer the Redskins.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of as a tribute. Anyway, the Bears beat the Redskins 73-0.
Yeah. Not much
of
a game.
To win the NFL title. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pre-Super Bowl. So
yeah.
In 1941, the U.S. officially declared war on Japan.
Of course, we made remembrance on our Facebook page, of course, yesterday. And those of us who do remember, it's getting dimmer, which is unfortunate. But yesterday was Pearl Harbor Day, and to pay homage to that. Have you been to the Arizona Memorial there over there in Hawaii?
I did when I was 17 years old.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, we were there. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. Need to go back. 1969, President Nixon announces the war is ending in Vietnam.
Okay.
All right.
In 1980, John Lennon was shot and killed.
Now, I remember this. I was in high school when this happened. I was actually watching TV down in the basement, and the news flash came on, and boy, yeah, that was quite a shock for everybody. In 1985, the Byte Shop, BYTE, in Mission Valley, California, sells all 50 of the first Apple I computers, interesting, for $666.66K.
Any of you that are kind of with that, you know, 666 is a bad number. I'm sitting there going, the fact that they sold them all for this, they knew where the technology was headed, didn't they?
Yeah, let's look peer into 2025 and see where we're going to be.
No. In 1993, NAFTA signed into law the giant sucking sound.
Yes, that sucking sound. Yep. Mm-hmm. He warned us about it. Ross Perot. Also, too, this was interesting. This actually happened over the weekend. I saw this. Google drops the 2025 search rankings. Guess who was the leading? What was the number one search, do you think?
Oh, I know because I've read it right here, but I could make some random guess. But I think we all
guesses.
Know. I think we all know who it, you know, when it comes to who was the is the key word. And of course, Charlie Kirk leading the nation in Google searches.
And I don't want to get, I'm so tired of this. I actually had to turn off. I normally have, you know, KYKN in the background. I put Christmas music on this morning. The infighting, everything, the finger pointing, I just couldn't take it this morning. People get your crap together. My Lord.
Well, you recall on Thursday's show when we were kind of wrapping up, we were talking about the Candace Owens TPUSA back and forth.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking
and
about.
And it quickly dismantled, you know, things like, oh, well, the flight's just not convenient. Let's do it online.
Yeah, and then now the husband and all the interesting things coming out there. And it's interesting to see who's sort of like, people are sort of, they're picking their camps and their factions. And we all know factions are absolutely, they're just devastatingly... It's really concerning. I'm very concerned about it. I really am. I know where I stand on it. It's just really concerning, and it's disappointing, and it just makes me want to put on Christmas music and not pay attention to it for a little while.
To me, that
gets to be too much.
Yeah, well, and that's such the frustrating part, being conservative-leaning and wanting Republican leadership in our government is I'm sitting here going, the two sides, you know, there's multiple factions within it that are all seem to constantly be fighting. Yeah. And just, it's like, we need to, you know, get together and put the outlying issues apart in order to group together and win elections.
I agree. And it's so, so frustrating. And a lot of it, none of this seems organic to me. Maybe that's the cynic in me, and I've got my tinfoil hat. I need to go grab it out of the box, because none of this seems organic. It all seems very contrived. And I don't know by who, and I kind of know why, because it is fracturing everything. But let's go ahead and take a break. And then I want to talk about that, because there's this narrative out there in Oregon politics as far as who's running for governor on the Republican side. And some people have been kind of posing questions and asking questions, just asking questions. That sounds familiar. So let's come back and dig into that a little bit more. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Home Comfort and Color Tile of Salem.
Okay, so I'm seeing this, I guess it's more of a sentiment. It's not really there's not a big push or anything like that, but a couple of people have been kind of positing, and I'm seeing it out on X, and I'm seeing other folks talk about it. In fact, you and I, Hunter, in the 2022, we made comment on it when we moderated the Timber Unity debate. And there were 17, 18, 19 candidates in the primary, and how, you know, it does kind of, for the electorate, that's a lot to choose from. I'd say the vast majority of the people on that stage were certainly not qualified, had no shot in hell of winning, and it just seemed to be a lot of noise. That said, that is what the primary is for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, I'm sitting here kind of going, you know, the other part, and we go back to, 4 years ago, and you go, the other part of it was the media role in it, where the media, every time they had an opportunity, said 19 Republicans. There were 17 Democrats, but unless you paid attention, you didn't know that, because the media only talked about two. So that's the other part of the game, because there were 17 on the Democrat side, 19 on the Republican side. But the media and the messaging was, there's a ton of Republicans running, pick, you know, there's so much to choose from. And on the Democrat side of the ticket, there was only two.
Right. So there was that media narrative. And so, mm-hmm. It did get kind of confusing, and people, but the primary is where you vote for your candidate. I mean, I voted for my favorite candidate in the primary, who didn't ultimately end up becoming the candidate in the general, got fully behind Christine Drazen in 2022 when she was the candidate. Fortunately, we had Betsy Johnson in there as a spoiler, and we all know what happened, but so now we've got some Republicans, and I don't know, again, how widespread this is, but it is. People are talking about it, and that's a good thing. So they're calling for the candidates to get together and decide who will run for governor and support that person before the primary. Now, I understand the sentiment. I wholly disagree with it. We have closed primaries in Oregon. And again, that is where everybody hashes it out. The ideas are out there. That's the time, you know, the candidates fine tune their messages. They go to different events. They go to different central committee meetings and forums and dinners and this and that. And everything gets fine tuned and refined. So by the time the primary and whoever ultimately comes out the winner in the primary in May, they go on to the general. That's when everybody needs to get together. And that's where a lot of times we don't.
Well, and see, that's the thing. I have no challenges with, you know, kind of the understanding that if you aren't a major player and have no name recognition, you are not someone who's worked your way up, just a rando saying, I'm going to run for governor.
Right.
You know, yes, the Republican Party has a little bit of a ability to kind of say, hey, you know, you're just watering it down. You're giving the Democrats and the media a narrative to push that, you know, we're overwhelmed. But when you have a handful of candidates that have legitimate shots the Republican Party, the candidates themselves, there's no purpose in them getting together. We're not the Democrats. We're not going to handpick our person in a dark room or, you know, sit here and say, well, this person shouldn't run, so we're just going to put this person on the top of the ticket. We're not that way, and we don't want to be that way.
No.
So we want to have these primaries. And I get it. You know, the thought behind it is, well, you're spending a lot of money to do these things. But
whose money? It's campaign money.
It's money that the people that are running are going out and getting for their campaign. And it's not necessarily, I mean, you know, somebody who's donating to Danielle today or Danielle donating to Christine today may not be willing to donate to the other party. So where, you know, that money just never happens.
And honestly, when you really, when again, and you have to go look at Orstar, that tells the tale. Most of these, they're, and you know, they're the no shot in hell candidates. And a lot of them are vanity candidates. And a lot of them, to me, they're just, I don't even pay attention to them, really, because they don't have a shot. And if they're not willing to run for something else, like a school board or a city council or a water and sewer, anything else to get started, you know where they're coming from. They want that cachet. It's, is it fun to run for governor? I guess. But the thing that's saying it's campaign resources will be wasted. Most of them don't. They don't raise any money.
No.
So, and if they're, it's only those resources that are wasted. Media that covers it all, or the Timber Unity thing, have everybody up on the stage. Mine, it was more like attention resources are wasted. You have to sit there and listen to these people who really, you don't have a shot. And frankly, I don't really care what your stand is on issue X, but I am interested in the two or three that actually will be viable candidates. So that, to me, it's more of like attention resources than financial.
Yeah.
So that seems, I don't buy that argument that kind of people are throwing up there.
Well, and you know, going back to 2022, you also have to take into effect what the Oregon Republicans need to do, and what the focus needs to be, is once a candidate is decided in the primary, and encourage people to vote in the primary. That's what should be
Absolutely.
Going on right now. Educating and getting people to vote, because yes, this will be the ticket that brings people to the ballot. But it's everything down ballot that matters the most, a.k.a. Salem City Council, that's decided in this May ballot. But once that candidate is selected, let's get together and come together to support the one candidate, rather than what we saw in 2022, where groups fractured off and said, well, I lost to them, so me and my people aren't going to vote for them.
Yeah. And then, you know, sort of engaging in nefarious little underground backdoor campaigns to discredit and things like that. We saw a lot of that. And then, you know, with the sort of the attention resources, and people saying, well, I don't have time to research all the candidates. All of them have websites. It'll take you, what, 10 minutes to go look and go, okay, that person's not viable. And again, go look at their money. Go look at if there's any endorsements. It doesn't take that much. Most people are going to vote for whoever the top tier. And at this point, it is Danielle and Christine. If Chris Dudley gets in there, that's probably the top three.
Yeah. Well, and I sit here and go, well, let's say you just don't understand this whole internet thing, that you weren't there to pay $666.66 to get your Microsoft One. You know, you don't understand this whole website thing. The state of Oregon will mail you a voter's pamphlet, and you can open that up. And if they're a viable candidate, they're going to be in there, and you are going to see their statement, and you're going to see some recommendations and twos and fours and blah, 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 and everything else. So the information is there. You just have to be willing to look at it.
Yeah, that's not a heavy lift. And again, in the primary, vote for who rings your bell. That's when you vote for that person.
You vote for your favorite candidate in the primary, and then you vote for the better option in the general, I think is the easiest way to put it.
Honestly, as Republicans, and I think, you know, and then also non-affiliated, no, they don't get a say in the primary. That is, we have closed primaries in Oregon, and that is fine. I mean, the voters can vote to do away with that, but you don't want open primaries, because like you have said many times, I think one of your grandfather or whatever
grandfather
would cross over and they tinker around and they, yeah, we don't want that happening. So it's a closed primary. And then I also don't want a smoke-filled room with political power players or whatever deciding.
And donors.
Who, and donors, yes, who will be the candidate for us little folks to vote on. No, thank you.
Yeah, well.
No, thank you.
And the thing with, you know, and because this debate, I'm sure, in Oregon will continue on about the open primaries and so on and so forth. But I sit here and go, here's the thing about it. It's yes, the vote blue, no matter who crowd will happily go over and vote for the easiest Republican to beat, you know, as a viable candidate in order to better the chances of a Democrat winning in the general. That's number one, when it's open. Number two, go back to 2016 and look at the massive spike in Republican registration. And then factor in, and I've always looked at it this way, that Hillary was the presumed nominee all the way along, but Bernie Sanders gave her a run for money, because I think a lot of Hillary voters, rather than vote for Hillary in primary, went ahead and registered as Democrats or voted for Trump in an open primary, thinking he was the easy guy to beat.
Yeah, that backfired.
So I'm kind of going, you know, if somebody wants to tinker and wants to go ahead and register as a Republican in the primary just so they can vote for a weak candidate, that's an extra step, and it's not as easy as an open primary. and they can do that all day if they want to.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know that this is necessarily gaining any traction. And again, like we said, we understand the frustration. I understand the motivation behind it. I really do. It does seem to get, and I really, a lot of these people, it's like, I've talked to, you know, I would, my question would always be to any candidate like that. Well, if you lose the primary, if, okay, really it's when, are you going to run for something closer to home? Oh, no, no, no. And I'm like, okay, that tells me everything I need to know about you.
Well,
not supporting you, frankly. If you're not willing to put in some time, you're going to go from zero to 60. It's like, no. Well, and half of it's name recognition. And then my understanding, there's at least one candidate out there who's not very polite. It's like, you might want to be polite to people inquiring about your campaign.
Well, I go back to when we hosted the Timber Unity debate, and I'm sitting here going, on that panel with 17 people, I think, two of them went on to run for some other position, and a couple of retired, and all of the rest just kind of disappeared back into the woodworks, maybe moved out of state, maybe just went back about their normal lives. And I'm kind of going, so what was the real premise behind you running?
Yeah. And I don't know the motivations, but all right, we're almost to the bottom of the hour. I do want to remind everybody, you need to get your gas tax petitions turned in. There's an address for that. We can give it to you. They really need to get in. I know it's been record numbers. I mean, the energy is behind this effort for sure.
Well, and for me, I sit here and go, you know, if you have that, you know, a single sheet or something with just a few signatures, still turn it in anyway. I mean, they're saying we're double the amount we need, but they'll find reasons to DQ some pages. So let's get every signature and really send that message that this is not okay to just hand us a tax and say, pay it. Because we're your queen or king.
Yeah. You want the message to be resounding now. All right, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody, on this dreary, rainy, lugubrious Monday. I always love it when I can say that, except that I have to sit here and be in a lugubrious, rainy Monday.
Yeah, that's the downside.
That's the downside. Okay. Really good and interesting information here. You know, I don't know much. Chariots was looking at electrifying. There's some electric buses running around in Salem and Marion and Polk counties. But a lot of transit districts, they're pulling millions of dollars of electric buses off the roads because, you know what, it's just kind of not working.
What? No. Come on. It has to be working.
Well, okay. No, it isn't. Lane County retired $30 million in failed buses after battery short circuits. Okay. Josephine County grounded its entire fleet after one caught fire, and recalls are hitting nationwide. Governor Kotek, of course, is doubling down. She just signed a climate action executive order 2529, which this is, of course, coming fresh off the $4.3 billion gas tax. She's pushing these new mandates that will raise fuel and energy costs even more. And this is despite 97% of Oregonians still driving gas-powered vehicles. I see electric vehicles. I think range anxiety is a big thing. I know you and I were talking offline in the break. That's my thing. I mean, if you have to go anywhere, I would have range anxiety because I see people with you're in and out of the gas station in 5 minutes. They're sitting there cooling their heels half an hour, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Vulnerable. You're just sitting there. And then, you know, if you run out and you're in the middle of nowhere, kind of stuck.
Well, the other trick is you remember, you know, we were supposed to have all of these electric charging stations built, and so that never actually happened.
Oh,
so
that was Biden, right? What did we get? One?
No, I think we had six or seven across the nation.
Okay.
Know. So I'm kind of going, you know, because we have a family member that has an electric car, and when it comes to road trip times, it's like, you know, which vehicles are going, you know, on these road trips. And it's like, well, not that one, because even if it gets to the destination, it's going to take a plenty of time to recharge it. And not knowing if there is a actual speeding charging station, you know, within access in whatever area we're going to, it's like, you just can't. So I'm kind of going, so what's the point beyond, you know, just a local commuter? And I'm going, And that's the challenge with these electric buses. If you ever look, because there's one driving around here, at least
I've seen it.
And it's got, you know, these big, big like humps on the back on the across the roof, which I'm assuming is probably where the batteries are all stored in these big humps to keep that thing actually moving forward.
And it really, I mean, we've talked about this in the past. I mean, just what it takes to mine the materials for these batteries, it's not green. In fact, it's combustion engines are actually probably greener than electric vehicles, not to mention the weight of these vehicles. Mm-hmm. So the damage they do to the roads. My thing would be, range anxiety. It's like, ooh, I don't want to run. One of my first cars didn't have a gas gauge, so I was constantly having to do, wait for it, math to figure out how much gas I had left. So I ran out of gas often, but I have a little anxiety with that. Remember, not good at math here. So I have anxiety about that. So I think if I was driving an electric car, I would be like constantly checking my little meter where I'm at, especially if I had to go anywhere. And I get that they're cool and the self-driving thing. And I know we were talking about that. Maybe I'm a control freak. I want to control my own rig when I'm driving. Kind of want to control it.
I have a hard time riding in the passenger seat because I want to control it as I'm going down
the
road.
I'm a terrible passenger. Just ask the mustache.
Oh, I just make little, you know, underhanded comments if I'm in the passenger seat.
Is it the woman thing is like, it's that noise where you suck all the air in. And my thing is I'm like, I'm the extra brake on the passenger side. There, I'm helping. See, I'm using my hand brake.
Oh, no, I will be very vocal and you know, brakes.
Oh, wow. So you're more obnoxious than I am.
I have to be because I need the control and, you know, whatever reason is behind that. But I think it actually goes into, I'm not a big roller coaster fan. Because I don't like not being in control and being kind of whipped around in those things. And I'm too much of a control freak when I'm in motion and I want to control what's going on with me.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I like being in control. So I just think a lot of this technology, for whatever you feel about Tesla, and I don't have an opinion on Tesla at all, other than, you know, it was that whole stupid thing where people were keying it and burning it. It was like, really?
Well, for me,
really?
The simple solution is amongst us, and it's not talked about, and that's the hybrid, because it makes
I own one and I love it.
And I sit here and go, with the engine technology of today and the emissions technology that we have, the gas efficiency, it is more damaging to the environment from start to finish, the life of an electric car versus a you know, gasoline engine car. But when you have that hybrid technology where you can drive for a while and then it recharges itself while the engine is being used, and I'm going, so virtually your gas bill is significantly less because, you know, you have the electric option, and your electric bill at home isn't significantly more because the car's charging itself. I would think that would make, why didn't we ever just push that to the moon rather than this electric? And I can tell you why, but
And that's the thing. And you talk about having to charge it. And so there's your electric. And as far as the grid and everything else being sort of shaky, our grid's not in great shape here, people. So adding more onto it with the infrastructure. And then if you don't like juice up the plug, you have to whatever, make it better, take it to 11. If you're sticking it into just a wall socket, it's like very slowly charging. But so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So anyway, the electric buses, and again, those, it's like electric trucks. When people would try to tow something or with an electric truck versus a gas or a big diesel, a big Hemi, it's like, it's not this, no.
Well, there's some companies in California that, I remember reading about a while back, had a couple of big rigs that could make the, you know, they were like 100-mile kind of vehicles, and they were okay with that until they had to go up a hill. And the moment they had to pull a load up a hill in these big semis, these electric semis, they ended up stranded and kind of did away with that program, even if it was a short range that had to go uphill. So.
I mean, even in a gas truck, when you're trying to go uphill, everything kind of goes, and it's a lot slower. And if you're on a 2-lane highway, you do not want to be behind that person.
Well, and that's the thing. I'm sitting here going, so these electric buses, okay, they're fine around town. They're fine, you know, getting to and from. But if they ever had to do things like go up over the mountain or, you know, through the hills of Portland, I would sit there and question every little bit of it. I mean, I've seen some challenges for the buses just in those Portland hills.
Yeah.
When the weather is not nice. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, so, okay. So, you know, and again, talk of Kotek doubling down on this, that $4.3 billion gas tax is so unpopular that even the public sector union people rank and file are not for this.
Well, I thought they were calling the people and telling them not to sign.
Union SCI did. Yeah, the union support. And again, thanks to our friends over at OregonCatalyst.com. Headline, surprisingly, support among unions to stop the gas tax. Union members, I mean, I know when I had to be a member of a union, it's not that I supported the union. I just had to be until finally you can opt out. But the union support for the Stop the Gas Tax referendum could also be felt when the state's largest union, SEIU, put out that alert. I think that was last week, asking their own members to spy on signature gatherers for mistakes. And they faced immediate backlash. Again, polling shows 80% of Oregonians favor the referendum petition's goal of giving voters a right. Reaching 80% shows that there's a lot of union support. And a lot of people who are in the union don't abide by, you know, they're just in the union for collective bargaining or whatever. Well, they're just there. And many times you have to be as a condition of your job.
Even if they are 100% union loyalists, they still have to drive to work.
Yep.
They still have to drive home, and they have to understand that raising the price of gas is going to make the bottom line for whatever business they are a part of much more challenging, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Last paragraph in the article, too, it says it makes sense for union members to oppose overly harmful tax increases like this Kotex, it is hers, Kotex, $4.3 billion tax gas tax wage bill that will hurt taxpayers and the economy that funds union jobs. Like you said, union members, they read the same newspapers that taxpayers do. And so when ODOT made that $1 billion accounting error, they know that ODOT is mismanaged and in desperate need of accountability. Throwing money at it is not going to fix it. And besides, it looks like money isn't going to be thrown at it because this will make the ballot, and it'll be successful. Mm-hmm. So that'll forestall things out for another year, and then it'll probably kill it all anyway. So we'll see.
Then they'll manage to find the funds needed. Miraculously,
what?
Just a feeling I have. Someone will just show up and go, well, look, I found all this money.
I looked behind the couch. There it was all the time.
Oh, this cushion in your office, Tina. This has got so much money in it.
Oh, my gosh. All right, let's go ahead and take our last break. You are listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Pearland Mill and Cozy's New York Deli.
Cozy's. Okay, this is file this under crap's getting crazy out there. This is crazy. I don't know a lot of you. I know Tim Pool. I watch Timcast IRL. Mm-hmm. I don't watch it religiously. I'll watch snippets of it on YouTube. And, I would say he's really more kind of center. He's not really conservative. He really kind of comes from the left. Mm-hmm. But the left has gotten so Looney Tunes and so crazy that he seems like he's a right wing, you know, far right, like we all do, actually, because the left has gotten so crazy. But this is getting scary because we're seeing an uptick in violence. So this was posted yesterday. So I guess it was Saturday night that this happened. Last night, quote, here's a post from him on X. Last night, a vehicle approached our property and opened fire. No one was hurt. Our security team is reviewing the incident and will be relaying the report to appropriate law enforcement. This is the price we pay for speaking out against evil. Now, I know he's since moved from where he was more urban. He's in a rural setting. I don't quite know where, somewhere, maybe Tennessee. It seems like everybody moved to Tennessee. This is very concerning. He's been swatted a lot. If you know what swatting is somebody calls in and makes a false claim and it gets people to come out, guns drawn. And frankly, I guess the hope is that the person that you're swatting will be killed.
Yeah.
I don't know why else you would do that, because that would be the ultimate outcome. I mean, that's pretty awful. And that's happened to him a number of times. So now this is escalating up. And then, you know, we were talking earlier in the show about, you know, all the factions and the infighting and everything else on the right. I mean, it just seems like every day you wake up, what fresh hell are we going to get? And it just, it, And then, of course, MTG was on 60 Minutes, which I did not watch. And so she's mad at Trump, and everybody's mad at somebody, and everybody's screaming, and the rhetoric is ramping up. Meanwhile, shots fired. It's like, yeah.
You know, and I can sit here. Yeah, I mean, this just the amount of infighting. And I won't sit here and say I'm happy with the way things are going at the federal level.
No.
But at the same time, getting out there and doing the press junket, mm-hmm. And making your party look bad, I'm not a big fan. I didn't watch the MTG thing either.
I did not either.
But I'm kind of going, the fact he went on enemy media, and you probably got treated very well simply because you're speaking out against Trump.
Right.
Kind of, I'm like, what's the point besides getting yourself more name recognition and this and that and feeding fuel to the other side? Yeah, Congress could be doing a whole heck of a lot more to work with the Trump agenda. And Trump could do things maybe in a more polite, gentle way. I don't know. But I'm going, the things that are happening are the things that we all voted for, the things we wanted. And it's not moving fast enough. I don't know. But I'm kind of going, overall, I'm okay with it. I'm not impressed with it, Congress and the Senate, in the way they're handling things.
I think they have a lower approval rating than left-wing media. I think they're even lower than that. And I get it. And I get frustrated with the president. Sometimes tone it down. Some of the truth posts and things like that. And it's like, that's not helpful. Because if there are other people, I've got members of my family that, you know, if you want to look at this and you want to have a conversation about policy, the overheated rhetoric and the name calling and the finger pointing just is so much noise. And you have to be, if you're a conservative on the right, it's like, well, what do you think about that? Well, what do you think about that? I'm like, first of all, I didn't see that. And now I have to defend it or debunk it or what? It's just, it's all kind of drives me a little batty.
Well, it's real simple. It's kind of like when, you know, if you're trying to have a policy debate with someone who is leaning far left or even mm-hmm. moderately left, their basis is an emotion. So they're going to utilize every one of these things as an emotional thing, and you're never going to get to the policy discussion because that's the way it is. You want to talk policy and how well things are going. I mean, I have it within my own family. It's like, you know, gas prices across the nation, except for Oregon, are getting lower. You know, this and this, all these things are getting better across the nation. Oregon is an exception because mm-hmm. guess what? 30 years of Democrat rule.
Yep.
But they want to go to Trump's behavior and Trump this and, you know, I'm kind of going, that's the problem. You're never going to have the quality debate as long as is the fuel for the emotional argument is hot and burning.
Yeah. And I have to say, and I always hate this argument, it's happening on both sides. Well, it is. Mm-hmm. And I get frustrated by it because it's hard to get down to the meat of the matter when there's all this other inflammatory stuff. And there have been comments that are made that, again, are just not helpful. So, you know, anyway, which leads me to what I want to talk about next before we run. Okay, I watched quite a few movies. I did watch It's a Wonderful Life this weekend, and I cry every time. I do every time. But I also watched, and I found this again. I love sci-fi, old sci-fi. I remember this from the 80s. V, and it's not V is for Vendetta. That's a different mm-hmm. movie. This is V. It was a miniseries in the 80s about aliens coming to Earth. You know, we are of peace, and we come to help mankind. And I don't know if you remember the old Twilight Zone, To Serve Man, and at the end of it, you're like, it's a cookbook. So this, you know, and so they remade it in 2009, and that's the one I'm watching. And I wrote a post about it, and I'm like, I don't know, color me crazy. Some of this feels really familiar. Media manipulation, fear mongering, pandemics, forced vaccines, invasion, pitting families against each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it goes back to Hollywood has been telling us what's coming down the pike forever.
Yeah.
And we don't pay attention. We think, no, that'll never happen.
Well, we just need to figure out the correct watching order for all of the clues Hollywood is giving us. And we could pretend we're time travelers today.
We could. In mm-hmm. fact, in 2009, if we had paid attention, we would have known. And many of us were. But it is kind of interesting to see that a lot of these themes have been around for a long time. Every what was it, like the Hot Zone and all the pandemic movies. I think there was even an episode of The X-Files that kind of nailed it all. Maybe it was the other one. The little nerdy guys. I don't remember the name of that show. But anyway, just watching this again, and it's like, wow, yeah. Yeah, they've pretty much been telling us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a number of movies you can just go out and that might be it. You know, you get all these people that take, you know, Marvel or DC or, you know, Walking Dead or all these different things, and they try and create the perfect watching order for all of these big conglomerates. I'm going, what we really need is someone to just break it down, throw everything on the table and go, okay, Hollywood said this on this day and this on this day, and create a watch order that can just literally tell us everything that's coming our way.
We could have AI do that for us.
You think it's
maybe
capable?
Maybe I'll do that. I think it is. I'll do an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
I will do an, hold on, Hunter. I'm writing a note. AI timeline for watching. Let's see what it comes up with.
See if it'll create the perfect Hollywood lineup to let you know what the next 5 years are going to look like.
Or it'll just laugh. Silly human. Take off your tinfoil hat. Okay, so speaking of that and kind of vaccines and forced vaccines and things like that, my poll question today that I get these every day. Sometimes they're appropriate, sometimes they're not. This one was interesting. When it comes to vaccine recommendations, whose judgment do you trust most? And the options were medical experts and elected officials. And I literally was like, can I have none of the above, please? And there was no option for that.
Yeah, there is a no answer there. I am just sitting here going, that question alone sits there and goes, you know, it's designed to say, oh, medical experts. But guess what? The politicians sit there and go, oh, no, we found a medical expert that says whatever we want you to think.
And which medical experts? Because the medical experts that I listened to during COVID, well, you had to dig real deep to find them because they were censored and shunned and blacklisted.
They were no longer considered medical experts. They were considered crackpots.
That's exactly right. So I had to pick something. So I did pick medical experts because I'm going to take a medical expert over a politician any day. And interesting, the results were 89.3% for medical experts, but 10.7% of people were like, I'm going to go with, you know, politician A.
Whatever.
We're going to take... Whatever
the government, tells me, that's what I'm going to do.
So the whole country, with the exception of North Dakota, barely North Dakota went with elected officials. Breakdown among men and women is not. I mean, it's pretty overwhelming. Same thing. Democrats, though, for medical experts, 98.8. Republicans, 92.2, and then independents, 93. So there's a little bit more skepticism with the Republicans and the independents. Democrats are like, medical experts, does he have a bow tie? Even better.
Well, they should have given you the two options of none of the above or both, because, you know, these politicians, most of the Democrats figure are medical experts, because when it was Kate Brown in the bow tie or Biden and Fauci, everyone assumed that they were one and the same, right? Come on.
They did. And I suppose you could say on the other side, RFK Jr. is not necessarily a medical expert. He's heading up HHS right now, but... Yeah, and I don't always agree with him.
Well, but I'm sitting here going, the head of a department, I get into this one. Where they're sitting there going, you know, Dr. Jill should have been the head of that. And I'm going, why? It's a pencil-pushing position.
Exactly.
It is not a medical position. It is not somewhere where you're going to be interacting with patients.
Oh, and she's not a medical doctor, but don't say anything.
Come on. Yes, she is. She's a great doctor. I was told that by Whoopi. Whoopi told me she is the best doctor she has ever seen.
Didn't Whoopi want her to be Surgeon General?
Yeah, exactly, because she is that great of a doctor. So, when you're sitting on the cabinet, that's a pencil pushing position. That is not. You don't need a doctorate to be a doctor, to be an acting physician to do that job.
No, you don't. All right, everybody, that's it for us today. Join us tomorrow. Real Estate Insights with Amy McLeod is coming up tomorrow. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.